About 9 years ago, I had the opportunity to get started in bioenergetics and learning how to do electrodermal screening or electroacupuncture using an acupuncture device of sorts and a stylus, and a whole new world of healthcare opportunities opened up to me. It was really exciting, and I guess by the fact that you're viewing this tape, you've decided to undertake the same opportunities. These tapes are just to get you started. They'll head you in the right direction. It's an exciting field. It incorporates a multitude of disciplines, and it incorporates both skills in science and science knowledge and skills in art and artistic capacities and abilities. It's really exciting. We hope you enjoy your journey, and you should view this as a journey because it will last your lifetime. As I have developed my skills and techniques in learning this, I had to learn and acquire knowledge in a number of areas. First of all, just regular medicine, my background in anatomy and physiology and regular mainstream medicine continues to serve me to this day. But I've also had to learn about other disciplines. I've had to learn about acupuncture and the Chinese model of medicine and their concepts about wellness. I've had to learn about their principles of health and well-being as they relate to the body, and some of their philosophies as they associate with different meridian flows in the body. I've had to learn about homeopathy as a natural therapy, as a natural stimulus to our system and our tissues to help the body try to heal itself. I've had to learn about nutritional therapies in a different way. I've had to learn about herbal therapies. I've had to learn and understand a lot about dentistry, chiropractic, and even different surgical procedures and concepts relative to mainstream medicine that way. Incorporated in all that, I've had to learn great things about adjunct therapies, Jinshin, massage and bodywork. All those things contribute to a holistic approach of healthcare. And one of the places that they can be joined together, one of the places that you can facilitate a number of practitioners as to effectiveness and support and compatibility of different disciplines are contained in the processes that we learn through these tapes. We want you to enjoy the journey. And if you enjoy learning, if you enjoy being involved with people, if you enjoy helping people get better, you're in the right place. This is a process, though, that takes time. Don't be discouraged, because technically speaking, when they train for people to do this as a specialty, for example, in Germany, my understanding is that it's a 12-year program. Here, though, you can become efficient or proficient in the modality in less time than that, and it all depends on you. However, the learning aspects can go on for the rest of your life, as I've indicated. When you take this course, there are some things that we've known in teaching it to other people that will be helpful for you. We want you to first practice the things that you do on a regular basis. Take every advantage and every opportunity to sit somebody down in your family and test them. Use the modality. Do it as often as you can. There's no substitute for experience. The basic knowledge will come easily for some people, maybe harder for others, but there's no substitute for experience, and it requires skill. There's some things relative to that you should be aware of. You need to enhance your listening skills. You need to enhance your capacity to hear and understand. Based on our clinical experience, if you listen carefully, many times the client that you evaluate will tell you most of the things that you need to know. Most of them are tuned into their body, and they can say, well, there's something wrong with me because this pain's here, and I don't know why it's here, but I think it's because of this or that or this or that. Or it happened right after I did this. There's a lot of information in that, and you should understand that and try to be able to listen for understanding when you're evaluating a client. It requires the skills of being a patient. A lot of times you work with people that are sick. You know, and a sick person can sometimes not be very patient. And it requires you to be able to listen and understand, empathize with what's going on, to see if you can determine the things that you can, that you do that can help and help facilitate that person. The processes are exciting in that we have to learn so many different things, and the best way to learn that is by first viewing all the tapes. We'd recommend that you view the tapes, then we'd recommend that you study the books and the printed materials that are associated with those. Then we'd recommend you go back and view the tapes again, all the while in between practicing as much and as often as you can. After you've viewed the tapes and printed materials a second time, write down the questions that you might have, the things that come to mind from your practice or application. And you can fax those to us or bring them in the in when you come to do a practicum or a lab test, and we see if we can't be more specific to help you answer your questions. But do, hear, do, listen, do it again, listen, and do it again. It's a great and wonderful process. It's really exciting. We hope that you enjoy it. We hope the tapes give you a foundation. Remember, they're just a starting point and a step on a wonderful journey. But a journey, as the Chinese say, of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. We hope you enjoy it. Interesting questions that gets asked me these days is, what do you do, Spencer? And I'm going to try to answer that question. The original part of what I do comes from the Chinese model of medicine and the concept that they have, that there is in the body an electrical system that the body has afferent pathways, or what are called by the Chinese as meridians. These are pervasive throughout the body, the torso of the body, and they endpoint on the fingers of the hands and toes of the feet. This is an electrical process that the Chinese identified several thousand years ago. Their process of life, they call it, or a flow of energy, or qi, that occurs in the body. A German physician named Reinhold Voll became intrigued with this concept. Now, this electrical current that flows in our body is independent of our sympathetic or parasympathetic or our central nervous system. It just is what the Chinese say gives life to the body. This German physician in the early 50s became intrigued with that concept and wanted to measure, if he could, that electrical current. He said, being German, he felt that he ought to be able to do that. He made a device that he called a dermatron that allowed him to measure that electrical current. And then in a number of clinical settings, he tried to determine if that current provided any information as to the health or conditions of the body's organs and tissues. He found a number of other physicians that were willing to facilitate his study and research, and they would send him patients that had pre-diagnosed conditions, and he would evaluate them to measure their meridians and see if he could indeed verify or ratify the existing condition that had been diagnosed. After some practice and experimentation, he became quite adept at being able to verify the conditions that would be diagnosed clinically. He was quite pleased with that, but he also continued on in his research, and as he evaluated the meridians, he found that indeed they had an energy flow that could be measured that not only identified the body's ill processes, but showed that it was taking care of problems before they would be manifest clinically. For example, he would evaluate a liver and see that the blood test showed the liver was having problems, and on the same person he'd also see, for example, the kidney was expending a great amount of energy. He would just make a note of this and send back the patient. When the patient would return for follow-up evaluations somewhere down the road, he would indeed see that the kidney had been stressed or that the kidney was having problems and it manifests clinically. His belief was then that the information that he got from the electroacupuncture meridians evaluation allowed him to see problems as they existed, but also to see them before they would be manifest clinically on a subclinical level, on a level that let him know the body was expending energy and resources to maintain wellness, but that it was not experiencing, or the person was not experiencing any symptoms to indicate such a process was going on. Well, a number of things happened. Dr. Vohl had in his mind the concept that if this was an electrical part of the body, an electrical entity, that it should indeed respond to electrical therapy. But he was wrong. He was disappointed in that. He had minimal success in stimulating the body with microcurrents of different voltage and amperage, but he persisted in his research because he did believe that he could have a diagnostic device that used the concepts the Chinese model of medicine presented. He had a serendipitous experience with one of a group of practitioners that he worked with in demonstrating his machine and the device that he developed to allow him to measure this part of the body. He called a practitioner up, a volunteer. He measured his meridians and found that the volunteer's prostate meridian was inflamed. He said, "We'll break for lunch, and after lunch I'll show you how we would normally treat this or how we might correct this." When they came back from lunch, he measured the practitioner's meridian again and found that the inflammatory response had been eliminated. He asked him what he'd done. The practitioner says, "I've done nothing." He said, "Well, something has changed." They retraced his steps and found that he'd gone to his bag as a practitioner. He had a homeopathic remedy he was going to use for the prostate gland. He had a Damfuel for it in his pocket. Dr. Vohl took it from him, measured his meridian again, and found that it had gone back to the inflammatory response. He had him hold it again. He measured it. It was normal. Took it away, measured it, was inflamed. There was something bioelectrical in the process that changed the acupuncture reading, the meridian reading, and indicated that there may be a potential for a change on the prostate by using that process. From that day forward, Dr. Vohl changed his research and married homeopathy with his electroacupuncture process. Some of Dr. Vohl's research skipped a few hypotheses, and other people have since gone back to try to verify or ratify some of the concepts he presented. The meridians, as we indicated, endpoint in the fingers and toes of the hands and feet. Each meridian has a specific pathway. In Germany and France, they have taken radioisotopes, injected those at sites of control measurement points for acupuncture, and then measured or photographed the results. Now, an isotope, unless it has an electrical current or pathway to follow, would normally just diffuse through the tissue. What happened was, though, for example, on the lung meridian, when they injected that radioisotope at that control measurement point, they found that it literally followed the pathway and ended in the lung itself. This research was duplicated in other ways to verify or ratify the existence of electrocurrents in the body that are independent of our central nervous system. All the meridians that the Chinese use have been mapped in one degree or another with a stereoscan electron microscopy, with radioisotopes, and a doctor named Bjorn Nordenstrom has done other experimentations to verify that we have an auxiliary circulatory system that matches generally what the Chinese model of medicine says has existed for several thousand years. Dr. Vohl and his processes found that homeopathy was the best therapy to stimulate this part of the body, that it had a capacity to make the changes lasting and desirable. Homeopathy by itself is quite a unique process, and nobody knew until recently exactly how it worked, because it, as a therapy, it does not exist chemically. It has been treated in such a way that there is no longer a chemical process. It is a very diluted substance, taking a small amount of a natural therapy, diluting it to many dilutions, and then that dilution being administered. No body had identified until recently how come this could work in the body. And basically it's because we're a bioelectrical entity, and homeopathy has the capacity to change that bioelectrical current in the body. Homeopathy is a unique form of therapy. It's probably the most widely practiced form of medical therapy in the world today. It has been around over 250 years now. It was discovered by a German physician also named Samuel Hahnemann. He had a unique perspective on healthcare. His unique concept of God was that he believed in a supreme being. He also believed that a supreme being would not allow illness to exist in the world without providing a natural way to address that illness. And he set about to discover a way to treat the body using natural therapy. His concepts have stood the test of time. From the late 1700s to today, homeopathy is widely used. It's not necessarily understood exactly how it works, or it hasn't been understood exactly how it worked until recent research and development. But basically the concept is one of, first of all, like cures like, or the law of similars, that a small amount of a substance that creates certain symptoms or conditions in the body in somebody that's well would be used in a small microdose to eliminate those symptoms or conditions in a body that is sick. Much of his concept of therapy is used in our healthcare processes today. The principles of vaccination have indeed been influenced by his concepts and the relationship of the law of similars, giving a small amount in the vaccine of a pathogen, virus, mumps, measles, whatever, to stimulate an antigen-antibody response in the body to prevent the body's reaction to those substances. However, his concept, he would be a little bit dismayed at the strength of the vaccinations today and wouldn't necessarily approve of that, but the principle is basically his. The idea was, for him and his research, that a small amount, microdosages, would eliminate symptoms or conditions. He proved many of those therapies to be effective. In fact, nearly lost his own life in proving many of the remedies on his body. Nobody until recently, as I mentioned, could identify the mechanism by how the body would respond to this kind of a therapy. It's a unique therapy. Many people write it off. Even our government today views it as an over-the-counter drug, nothing to be worried about because of two things. First of all, they don't believe that anything in a homeopathic therapy is there because it doesn't exist chemically. Because it doesn't exist chemically, it's therefore considered safe. They're right on a couple of points, that it is safe and nothing exists chemically, but it is also quite effective. In double-blind studies and significant clinical tests, homeopathy has been found to be effective, oftentimes in the 80 to 90 percentile, high above the placebo effect of the body that's been clinically evaluated. It has a very good track record. It has withstood the test of time. It has been around long enough to know that it is effective, or it would have died a long time ago. The unique thing about it is that the concept of using a small amount of something in microdosages or diluted to such a degree that it could no longer exist chemically and yet produce a response in the body is quite intriguing. And not many people have understood the mechanism. That wasn't until Dr. William Nelson lent his investigative powers and great mind to research as to why the body responded. Basically, our bodies are electrical in nature, as has been discussed. Our bodies are following laws of quantum physics. Dr. Nelson set about to determine why homeopathy worked in our bodies, because it certainly wasn't a chemical response that was occurring. He devised a number of instruments to allow him to measure homeopathy. He measured it in different ways and eventually found that homeopathy has a strong photometric property. That means it has an energy, it has a wave and a particle. And these are principles, of course, of Einstein physics or quantum physics. He found that homeopathic therapies are recognized by the body because of their photometrics. They are literally light in a bottle, or a light stimulus to the body. That's a unique concept. We have here a photograph on the top cover of his book of a homeopathic remedy, a single drop of a remedy that you can see has quite a unique light pattern. As he discovered other homeopathic processes, individual substances would have their own light pattern. He found also that they could be measured and quantified, and the greater or deeper the dilution would change the light pattern. He also found then that certain remedies could be combined together to create a different light pattern. So we have a drop, or a photograph of a drop, of a remedy that is a combination of more than one homeopathic substance. What he surmises, mathematically, he proved, is that the body responds to this light pattern in a way that would stimulate the acupuncture meridians, or the bioenergetic flow of the body, to adjust or correct the flow of electrons in the system. Homeopathy, therefore, is kind of a unique form of therapy. It's a very gentle, non-aggressive, non-invasive kind of therapy. It either works or it doesn't. The body either responds to this light pattern and energy pattern and some other processes associated with homeopathy, or it doesn't. But it works on a very subtle level. We are often used to, in our healthcare, of the body being stimulated chemically. This can create an instantaneous change that sets in motion a number of forces. But the natural therapy of homeopathy, though it can respond quite rapidly, for the most part is a gentle, subtle therapy that stimulates a change and the body responds and corrects itself. We use homeopathy simply because it has no side effects. The body either responds or it doesn't. The body then corrects itself, and there is no residual toxin. There's no list of contraindications that one has to worry about relative to symptoms or conditions that could occur. Because it is a subtle, gentle therapy, it has to be cared for in a different way, has to be taken or absorbed in a slightly different way. And there are some things that will eliminate its effectiveness, and these must be observed. But homeopathy is basically a bioelectrical response in the body, which is quite unique. But given the processes that we work with here, it is the therapy of choice. Dr. Nelson found in his research that many natural substances, herbs, vitamins, minerals, all had photometric properties, and that overall the body responded best to these natural therapies, and homeopathy being the... Homeopathy had a great influence in the United States healthcare system in the early 20s and 30s, many of our colleges and universities were dedicated to homeopathic therapies. We taught homeopathy in our medical schools. We used it in our hospitals. Doctors carried it in their black bags. It was the therapy of choice for the rest of the world, and the United States was leading the world in research in effectiveness of homeopathy. We had an interesting change of events. In the early 40s, with the discovery of penicillin and the concept of chemical therapy, homeopathy took a back seat. Mainstream medicine began to consider the concept that we as an entity were more chemical than anything else. Homeopathy was not ignored exclusively, but the main thrust of our medical education and medical instruction went to the biochemical side. The discovery of penicillin influenced that concept. Penicillin took a natural therapy, and it was discovered, of course, by drug companies that they could reduce penicillin to a synthetic substance. The synthetic substance could then be patented, and the patent made somebody a lot of money, and the chemical reproduced in a different way and used as a therapy. Now, antibiotics are a wonderful thing. The discovery of penicillin has been quite an effective therapy and an important one in healthcare processes. The significant difference is that it goes into the body, tells the body to stand back, and it will take care of the problem. The natural responses of the body are reduced, the natural stimulus of the body is eliminated, and the chemical action of the drug takes over where the body normally would respond on its own. The impact of that can be significant on one side, and in that the pathogen that the penicillin is designed to kill will certainly be eliminated. On the other side, there can be a toxic response to the drug, and the body's natural stimulus or natural immune system not be stimulated to eliminate the response on its own. The body could get lazy in a sense. But with the advent of the synthetic chemicals and the development and the concept of our education of chemical respondent therapy, homeopathy went to Europe, and most of the research and development in homeopathy that is in the United States today came to us or comes to us as a result of German, French, and other European research. It is still a pervasive and has had a long-standing experience or use in Western Europe. It's the remedy of choice because it's so inexpensive, easy to work with. It stimulates the body in a natural way and does not have side effects. It's not to say that we ignore penicillin or the use of antibiotics when they're necessary. They are certainly marvelous drugs for doing what they're supposed to do. But when something natural can be done and the body respond without having to worry about side effects, that would be generally our choice in terms of the therapy. Today, homeopathics are free to exist in the United States as an over-the-counter drug because the FDA, as a government agency, was actually developed in the early 30s to allow homeopathy to exist. Quite a remarkable change of events in the power of the FDA today, in that as a government agency, it's got the approval of drugs, but it was literally brought into effect to allow homeopathy to be considered as a mainstream therapy in the United States. As we discussed concepts here, first of all, the principles of the Chinese model of medicine and meridians that flow through the body. A therapy of choice to stimulate those meridians is basically homeopathy or a natural therapy, herbs, vitamins, and minerals. These things are essential processes or concepts that are important to understand about what we do in our office. Some important notes to make relative to what is the difference here and why would one come to this office to be evaluated. We have here an interesting illustration of that, perhaps that helps. This is a videotape. Now, some of you may not be able to play this videotape, but if you were to take it to a chemist, you might be able to analyze it. They could break it down, they could test the gate on the videotape, they could tell you what the chemical construction of the materials was made of, how much it weighed, and reduce it down. They could tell you the tape's covered with a mercuric oxide, and basically give you a chemical evaluation of everything about that tape. If you have them give you back the report, the next thing that you might want to ask, knowing that there was some information there, ask them what was on the tape. If they don't have an appropriate tape player, or if they didn't know that there was an electrical signal on this tape and didn't have a capacity to measure it, they could give you no information about what has been recorded on this tape. There is an interesting parallel with this concept in what we do in our office. In mainstream medicine, we analyze chemically the body's responses. We look at some things structurally and see what the body response would be. We analyze as much as we can about those processes. Some significant information, though, is contained, as it is on this tape, on an electrical level, in the bioelectrics of the body. We are an electrical entity. What we do in this office allows us to measure that process or that aspect of the body. We are not educated in these principles in our healthcare institutions in the United States. Germany, though, thanks to the research and development of Dr. Bohl and other practitioners, this is a part of their mainstream medicine. They not only analyze the tape, the box, the chemicals, but the electrical signal that's contained in the body. They are taught or instructed this principle in hospitals and universities and use it as a regular window to what's going on in the body. It's a medical procedure there in the United States. In the United States, it's classified as biofeedback, basically. But it's a window to the body and gives a perspective of what's going on. In our office, we use devices that are FDA approved, but they cannot be used as a diagnostic because this particular aspect of the body, in our country, no instrument does a diagnosis. So this is not a diagnosis, it is simply an evaluation of the electrical signals of what's contained in the body. But it's a very valuable piece. This tape may have no other value than for the electrical signal that's on it. The same may be true of the body, that it may there may be no presenting symptoms or conditions other than what are contained in the electrical signals of the body. You may parallel this with some interesting concepts or principles. First of all, according to the Government Accounting Office, just based on nutrition and nutritional development, the United States, fully 70% of the people of the United States can be classified as unwell. Health is defined by the medical community as absence of disease, but overall, symptoms or conditions, if they don't have a clinical manifestation, they're considered, well, it's all in your head, or there's not a need for any kind of therapy, there's nothing that we can do, so people might still be classified as well. There may be, though, an electrical signal that tells us what's going on and why that could be significant. The process that we go through in this office is to allow us to measure that electrical signal, determine what, if any, information is there that's important, and then define a therapy that helps address some of those symptoms or conditions that might be presented. And then the great advantage is in evaluating things and taking care of problems long before they manifest in a clinical situation. The body, based on research and other information that we have, literally addresses symptoms and conditions, disease processes, long before they become manifest or known to us, processes that are significant. And what we do in our office is to evaluate that aspect. It is designed to be a natural therapy, so there are some principles that are important. When you come to the office, you'll be evaluated in two ways. First, in an overall evaluation, a harness will be placed upon your head, some bands around your wrist and on each finger, and a computer evaluates all the acupuncture meridians of the body, at one time, and then at the same time, other substances are introduced to the current. Literally, thousands of substances are introduced to the body's electrical current in a non-invasive way to find out what the body's responses are to those substances. Based on those responses, and with the aid of the computer, it can be determined priorities and processes of the body that would need the most support or need the most help. This information then is verified in a slightly different process of a stress test, where each individual meridian of the body is evaluated against those prioritized substances to verify or ratify or to clarify particular processes that are identified. Then a therapy is defined, a homeopathic recommendations made, nutritional recommendations made, certain avoidances, dietary recommendations would all be made based on that evaluation. The idea being that the Chinese model of medicine and their concept is that wellness is defined as the body's energies being balanced. Everything that we work on here then is to balance the individual's energies and the flow of energy through their meridians. This is one part of a holistic approach. We encourage nutritional therapies of other natures. We encourage classical homeopathy. And there's a difference between the kind of homeopathy we practice and classical homeopathy. We encourage you visiting your doctor and having a regular physical. We encourage chiropractic and chiropractic approaches. We encourage, if necessary, a holistic approach includes surgery and proper surgery procedures. A holistic approach also includes dental and proper dental procedures. But this particular process allows us to have a unique window and perspective of what's going on in the body. And we believe that the effectiveness of it overall is in taking care of symptoms and conditions that may not be manifest clinically yet, or even in looking at the body to see where it's expending energy if a person is symptom-free. The great advantage is in taking care and preventative medicine. Medicine or preventative health care. The principal concept also is one of allowing the body to heal itself. We are uniquely designed for wellness. Every aspect of our cells and tissues are designed for wellness. It is contrary to the very makeup of our body to have disease and disease processes. Most of the time, disease comes as a result of the body being out of balance, energies and meridian flows not being effectively distributed, and a toxic response, or more than one toxic response in the body. We die, or disease processes are set in place because of a toxic response or a toxicity that has not been eliminated. This process allows us to have one window to what some of those toxins are, and also to define a therapy to eliminate that toxicity. Now that might sound a little bit presumptuous on one side. Toxicity is the cause of all disease, or the cause of death and illness. But if you think about the body eliminating toxicity from the lungs, for example, one of the toxins that we get rid of all the time with every breath is carbon dioxide. Put a bag over your head. See how long you live with that toxicity that you're eliminating. Concept. That is the idea of the process. There are other toxins in the body that need to be eliminated and facilitate some of that process with this window. Some of those things work on a very subtle level and can contribute to loss of energy, concentration, a number of processes. Those can be identified through... Regular traditional point testing using an EAV device, the body is evaluated on two channels, impedance and resistance. The bioelectrics of the body cover many of the same things that the electrical principles that exist that govern electricity in the world. That is, the principles of Ohm's law apply also to the body. So if we know impedance and resistance, we can also calculate or evaluate other electrical principles. Ohms, wattage, amperage, voltage, those things are also available to us based on the concepts that Ohms taught about electricity. One of the unique devices in the world today that enhances the principles of electricity and enhances the concepts of impedance and resistance that are significant to electroacupuncture are found in the device that's called an occlusion. The occlusion evaluates the body on 12 channels. A point testing device evaluates the body on 2 channels, impedance and resistance. The difference is significant in that the dimensions to the picture provided by the occlusion gives a greater view of what's going on in the body. Since it's computerized, it's driven faster, a number of things can be evaluated more quickly. Basically, some of the properties of the occlusion allow for a more direct, more in-depth picture of the system, of the system's response to several thousand substances in a short period of time. This device was developed by Dr. William Nelson, and he incorporated the principles, as we've discussed, about electroacupuncture, but enhanced the concepts relative to Ohm's law, and using mathematical models was able to determine a method to evaluate the meridians of the body in more depth and in more detail. This is the harness that's attached to what's called the occlusion box, I guess is the best word for it. I haven't heard any other name used for it. This allows a total body evaluation of all the meridians at one time. Inside this box are the connectors to the wires that allow the evaluation of the different substances. And it is attached to the body without inputting any energy into the system. It's a non-invasive evaluation. Here again is a significant difference between that and the traditional EAV point testing. The substances are evaluated then according to the mathematical model: amperage, voltage, impedance, resistance, ohms, wattage, bioresonance, all those things are evaluated through the harness. We're going to demonstrate then in a moment how this is attached to the body and how it works. In preparing to test or evaluate somebody on the occlusion, several things are really quite important. First of all, if the client is wearing any necklaces or anything metal that goes all the way around the neck or the wrist, these should be removed. Watches with batteries should also be removed. This is the same as it is in EAV, and this has been described before in EAV, but those things should probably be removed. Now, rings are significant occasionally, and we've talked about it in other applications, and we'll talk about it in different places. But normally, if the individual wears rings, we allow them to be evaluated with the rings in place. It is probably most desirable to have the patient well hydrated. That means that just before the evaluation, they should have had a pretty good sized drink of water, at least within the last hour. It is also probably preferable to wait maybe an hour or two after eating. It's not an absolute, but if conditions relative to digestion, if conditions relative to the bowel are already known or are significant, that might be a recommendation in terms of the evaluation. The information is still valuable and is still workable, but sometimes that's good to know. Occasionally, this information is not available on an initial evaluation. But nobody should probably be evaluated just immediately after eating, and either as it is in electroacupuncture with just the point testing device, or as it is in using the harness. Because of the nature of several of our clients, we used water to hydrate the contact points on the harness. There is also available an electric conductant gel that can be used, but several of our clients being chemically sensitive and intolerant, we choose to just use water. And this is just the same sponge that's available in EAV. This is moistened, applied to the contact points before they're attached to the client's body. We first put the harness around the head. The contact points are visible. These should be hydrated. You don't need a lot of water. You primarily just a touch to make sure they work. And then in attaching to the head, the center of the forehead should be directly underneath the control point here, in line with the nose. It should sit snugly around the head, but it shouldn't be too tight. You don't want to give them a headache. If at all possible, you remove all the hair if there's any in the way, but it should fit snugly and close to the scalp. Any problems with that? Does it hurt? You look great that way, I guess. It's a throwback to the 60s. Also then, the wrist probes, as they're attached to the body, they're identified for left hand and right hand, or left arm and right arm. The collection or connection point here on the inside of the probe is placed right over the brachial artery, right at the wrist. It should also be moistened. It should be held snug against the body. It shouldn't be too tight. Just snug. We do the one on the right side the same way. It would be important to note here that the entire wristband is made of anodized sterling silver. This is to make the entire band itself a collector and a measuring device. Then we use two finger contacts, one for the right side and one for the left side. Preferably, these are placed over the control measurement point of the allergy meridian, which is on, of course, the middle finger. Everybody knew that. Now, once these are in place, the client should be comfortable, should be relaxed, their legs should be uncrossed and lay straight ahead of them on the floor. And before the program is activated, the client should actually be left alone. We shouldn't be in here to distract the person being evaluated. This can sometimes create stress for the individual, so we leave when it's time to turn on the computer. After the evaluation occurs, we take the computer program back to the main menu, and then we can print out the analysis report. We'll give you a little bit of an illustration of what that is, and the information that's provided. We can evaluate from that overall harness evaluation the endocrine system, the digestive system, the immune system, central nervous system, lymphatics, circulation, and the point quad. There are other information here that's available that can be tested on a specific test. For our purposes, we are going to discuss the total general evaluation. Here we have represented on the screen the demand value for energy and energy values shown up on the screen. We look at this in the same context of the point testing. Again, the principles of balance are important. The idea is that the body should be in balance. 8s, 9s, and 10s are significant as an imbalance on the other side, and 1s and 2s can be significant on the low side. Overall, ideally, we'd like to see the body at a 5, but because of the dynamics of the system, our bodies being always changing and ever responding to environment and different stimuli, a normal range has been found to be between a 3 up to a 7. So if there's a low value or a high value, we want to make sure what the responses are in the body. We can evaluate the endocrine system, We can evaluate the digestive system. We can evaluate the immune system. We have information on the lymphatic process. And then we have information on the point quad system, which ties directly to acupuncture relationships. This information all comes to us as a result of the harness evaluation. I'm going to illustrate the use of just the point testing device called the C29A, I guess is now the new model number. This is a device that is used for biofeedback for the galvanic skin response. It has a stylus or point tester and a probe that the client can hold. These are connected together to get a readout on the I guess it's actually a glorified ohm meter, if nothing else. It has its own self-supporting battery system that's rechargeable, and this can be interfaced with a computer or it can be used as a standalone. It also has a top that's active that can be activated or deactivated as needed, but for purposes of our demonstration, we're going to use a test plate. And this is a takeoff or a makeup of one of the same processes that Reinhold Voll used in his original system. And basically, we want to demonstrate how to evaluate allergy. You got enough water on that?
I think so.
Okay, we'll just try that point again and let's see. But remember, when you put the needle in, when you put the point in, roll into it. Instead of from the top down, kind of from the bottom up. There, that's better.
Okay.
So you just kind of rock into it a little bit.
Okay.
Try this one. Well, that's real good. I think that's a better technique than what you were doing before. And it takes a little more practice to but not any more than to do it right.
How's that?
That's good.
That the right way?
Yeah, just kind of roll into it that way. You're watching for the change in the skin, and you're right on the neck of the bone, and that's because I know because I test myself, but that's good. That's good, yeah, just rock right into the point. You kind of guesstimate where it would be, put the tip at the edge of where you're going to roll up, and then push it up.
Does it matter if you go this way or up or down? Or?
Well, the angle is significant to make sure you get to the neck of the bone. So
is that better than...
The second one was probably a little better.
Like that?
Yeah. And it might be just a little higher. You see the change in my skin there.
Go up there.
Yeah,
more.
About there. The skin on individuals is really different, and that's important to. And that's good. That's a good technique.
So if it rolls,
so you
can you start low like that,
and roll into it, and then you're pushing into the neck of the bone, and then you capture that just right. That's the technique right there. Press and, what would we call that? Press and roll?
Yeah, something. Push and roll. It's if you...
That's good.
Yeah, you can kind of tell. Am I pushing too hard or...
Well, no, the pressure feels pretty good. It just takes a little practice. You want to make sure it's always kind of steady and the same.
Okay.
That point was just a little high, so you might move over just a tad.
Come
you can see where the... You draw your imaginary line on the edge of the nail, and then on the other corner, and you can see you're just about 3 millimeters up. And that's a better read.
Okay.
And that feels really pretty accurate that way. Okay. Sometimes you can, to find those points, rub the edge of the needle on the side here and see if you can hear the... You know how you've done that?
Yeah.
So you can hear it. Right, you can hear it right where it is.
It's right there.
So now just kind of rock into it and push against the bone.
Is this up and down okay, or should I go? See, I slipped if I do that.
Yeah, it's. You actually I'll need to keep it about a 45 degree angle on some of those.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
Like that?
Uh-huh. That feels good.
Okay.
And your pressure, I can tell you're keeping it pretty constant.
I ran into this finger here.
I'll move that. That's good. And there should be, when you look at a person after you've made the lasting impression on their fingers, you should see kind of a uniform pattern. It should be some symmetry in that process, and you should almost be able to connect all three of those points for the right to the nail on the hand. So that's doing really good. Let's try a couple more here.
Okay. Oh, those are going right to 50.
Well, I just had drops a few minutes ago, so that hopefully I'm balanced. And that that would tell us two things, if either my drops are working, or I figured if I did that and I was on the...
That looks a little high.
I draw the line again with the nail and then look at the skin. Yeah, that's about 3 millimeters up.
That's a little better, huh?
Yeah.
Now, how do you do the ones if you're going to do the, like, further back, like if we're going
to
do...
Well, if you're doing behind the knuckle, the thumb's a good place to practice, but you have to adjust somewhat to get to that angle, and you're coming from behind.
So I have to go like
that. So that's
that.
the 45 degree angle, because you're going to the neck of the bone.
Well, let's see, where's that change? I guess it's clear over here.
Yeah, you got to look at it, it's different.
That's like right in there.
Uh-huh.
So I... Like that?
Yeah, you probably want to keep a little more at a 45 degree angle. There you go.
Like that.
That's it. That's right on.
Okay.
And the angle's the same on the other thumb point.
Do you have them move their hand, or do you just...
Well, they're going to be able to adjust to you, but you manipulate them to get the angle that you want, because you have to access it. It doesn't hurt to have a chair with wheels. That angle again should be just a little bit more to 45 degrees. And the 45, just like that, that's the kind of the 45 degree angle.
It's hard to roll into that.
It is. So you know, move their hand as any way that you can so that you're comfortable.
Like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I just kind of been holding this, and I kind of use this finger, my ring finger, to...
To brace yourself.
To brace against
your hand. That's good. There's some things you can do, like on this desk, allow them to rest their weight. I've been putting my arm over on the edge of the desk, so there's nothing that really has to support my weight. Some people like to have a table right in front here and work with that and have access to those things. The other process that you can do is just manipulate any way that you can, but kind of keep them comfortable and relaxed.
So if you start in and go up like that, seem to work pretty well like that if I'm straight in, but sometimes if I